This morning we are going to do three reflections on death. And in some ways, how we make friends with it, or at least start to come to terms with the fact, as the old saying goes, none of us get out alive. So Sue is going to do the first reflection, and Barb will do the second, and then I will do the third. So I hope that our words will be useful at this time of year as we move into the darkest months and sometimes the lowest times that we have before spring. So, Sue?
Thank you, Bill, for your song. I asked Bill to sing it because it was from a 70s album that Marlo Thomas did called Free to Be You and Me. And it meant a lot to me when my kids were little, and it still does. And I'll refer to it a little bit more this morning. And thank you so much, Amy and Mary Lynn, for our music and the choir. I love music. And this has been special. They've asked... put some special music today together for us. So several years ago, I heard an article in the on the radio done by Caitlin Doughty, and she's an author who wrote the book Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. And if you haven't read her work, please do. It just opened up a whole world for me. And as I became interested, oddly enough, that day that I heard the interview, I stopped the car so I could listen to it, and it was right after we had a class here at church on aging. Some of you may remember that. I was going home, and then here I get Caitlin Doughty talking about her growth as a young mortician, and blew the whole world of death open to me. So oddly enough, I was thinking about this, and out in the parking lot, I happened to see Barb, and I was talking, and it turns out she was interested too. So we forged a friendship, a partnership on this whole topic, and we've been at it for several years now. She's the sort of the get-her-done half of our partnership, and I'm the woo-woo part. So... in the process for this morning, Reverend Alex referred us to a book called Making Friends with Death. And I hadn't read the Buddhist aspect of it. It was really interesting to me, but there was one section that I particularly liked that talked about the taboo of not talking about death, the silence about it all. And the author, Judith Leaf, talks about how... when you go through everyday life, people just look like they're all together. They look like, well, I'm, you know, everyday life, and I'm thinking, well, why am I thinking about this? Is this weird? Am I normal? But then the author goes on to say, hey, it just takes one person to go through the experience of losing, the suffering of losing a loved one, that melts away the taboo to talk about death. So, our mortality, we're aware of our mortality in our 50s, and over the decades, plural, I'm finding out more about death and experiencing friends and loved ones and people in this church who have died. I had a list of 15, and I can think of people that I've known since I've been here in the last 15 years that have passed on. So in my 70s now, I can look back and think of five different aspects of death that I wanted just to mention briefly this morning. They are illness, shock, addiction, suicide, and separation and loss. So under the illness part... you may remember Margaret Stewart, some of us, and when she had her cancer diagnosis, she just said, hey, I don't want to be in pain. I'm okay with dying, but I don't want to be in pain. and we visited her at hospice, and she was peaceful. I was grateful to her to learn that. The other person was Betty Richmond, a staunch icon of our church, and Tant and I tended to her through her illness, and finally she was diagnosed with what she called the beast has a name, cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. So our former minister, Carmen, and I had been with her for some time through her years of illness, and the last 2 days we were with her and at her home, and Betty raised up from her bed, and she said, "Where am I?" And Carmen looked at her very calmly and said, "Betty, you're in the last 2 days of your life," and she died that night. Shock. There was a young woman named Nikki Kuda in our youth group, and I was very fond of her. And I was proud of her when she went off to college and got her degree and came back to our church, and she said that she was looking for a job. But what a shock. Within the next few months, she died. Addiction. I had a friend for 50 years who called me one day. We were from Cleveland. She called me and she said, "Sue," she said, "my daughter died." Carol Kay was 49 years old, healthy, had 3 children. The toxicology report was never made public. Dottie herself died 3 years ago. Suicide. Two scenarios. Barb and I have been working on death cafes for the last couple years. And last year, a woman said, "Well, my mother has been ill, has a terminal illness, but she doesn't want to stop her medical treatment right now. She doesn't want to stop it because she believed that if she stopped her medical treatment, she would be committing suicide." That was a learning for me. The other scenario is when Ted and I were driving up at home, we saw our neighbor's driveway full of cars, and we wondered what was going on. And we got a call, and sure enough, Ron's 25-year-old son picked up a pistol and shot himself. So, and that's been recent. We went to the funeral, which was attended by several hundred people, and then to the military service at Roselawn Cemetery. And they played taps. And I just was crying. We all were crying. And I had to reassure myself that it's all right to cry. The last one is separation and loss. When my sister and I were I was 2.5 and she was 5. My mother disappeared for months, and my little mind couldn't get around the fact that she was paralyzed with polio. And but thanks to Sister Kinney, she recovered and then was my staunch supporter for 50 years. So 6 months of grievance therapy, and I was able to come through it with my husband, who sits above me. And so here I am. In sum, I've heard some of your stories here today, too, and I'm grateful for those and quite moved by them. And may we continue our stories to strengthen our web that connects us all.
Thanks, Sue. Well, I'm here today to talk about preparing for your guaranteed end of life. Americans are particularly prone not to talk about death or dying. Whether we fight it, deny it, or accept it, death is a fact. Yet most of us haven't prepared or talked about what we want at the end of our life. Sue and I have been doing conversation events for the last several years. Like she said, we're hosting death cafes and workshops and also even quirky creative coffin painting event. And what we've learned from these events is people saying that they really are refreshed, that there is a place that they can go to and talk about death without, and their beliefs and their experiences in a safe environment. So we feel really good that this is happening. And overall, our quest for immortality is pretty historic. Across the globe and through the ages, we have tried cheating death in various ways, sometimes very extreme measures like pyramids, fully equipped pyramids. And then people have aspired to immortality through religious beliefs and bequests and even age-extending experimentation. I think there's, cryonics. So we have been working hard to maintain our immortality. And today's medical progress has added 30 years to our lives than a century ago. So we are living longer, and with that comes a lot of decisions that we have to make medically. Luckily, we have a variety of plans to help us organize our thoughts and to start the conversation. And there's some in your bulletin, which is my Catholic upbringing, in your, what's that called? Order of service, yes. There's some in your order of service that will get you started. These are five that I picked out because I'm familiar with them, and I think they add a lot of information, but there's a lot of them out there now, and so you can choose whatever one you want. But the point is that it helps you get started, which is very difficult because we are all busy. We all have things to do, and the first thing we're not thinking about is not writing things down. But I've listened to a lot of radio shows and stuff, and one doctor said, there's nothing worse than seeing a sibling, a group of siblings outside their parents' room at the hospital arguing about what their parent would want. I mean, it's a very, very familiar sight, I'm sure. So kind of what I feel at this whole thing is we don't exactly know what's going to happen, how we're going to feel at the end of our lives. Nobody knows. But or how medical technology will change. I mean, getting knee surgery 20 years ago is a whole lot different than knee surgery now. But even with these unknowns, I think having conversations is an important thing. It's to the best of your knowledge, you want to be able to tell people what matters to you and share it with the people that you love. So that's pretty much it. It's important to think about it and research it and start having the conversation because it's always too soon until it's too late.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Barb. I'm looking at the time, and we end at 11:30, right? Is that when we usually end? Okay, well, then we'll ignore this. That's fine. I'm going to give you a little synopsis on what Buddhist teachings around making friends with death is about. And then we're going to end with a meditation before we do the last hymn. I've been a student of the Dharma, of the teachings, since the mid-1990s. I lived in a Buddhist monastery in Oregon for over a year. We got up every morning at 3:50 in the morning. And we talked a great deal, especially in the winter and autumn and winter months, about the decline and fall of what seemed like life, the joy of summer and everything blooming and flowering and so on, and going back into that season of longer nights and gloom. In Tibetan Buddhism, of course, they believe in reincarnation, although the Dalai Lama is saying that, well, maybe we don't need to do that anymore. And somehow politics is involved with that. And I'm not a Tibetan Buddhist student, so I can't really say much about it, except that I mentioned a couple months ago around my sister's death and an experience I had after that of sensing her presence in a very different state, which would have been the first bardo state after she had died. And I still believe in my heart that that was the case. In Zen tradition, it's like rowing out into the middle of the lake and sinking. The important thing is, what do we do with our life now? Do Do we treat ourselves and others kindly and with compassion and caring? That's what matters. What happens after life is over? Who knows? That's where the mystery beyond mystery is. Theravadin tradition, which is Southeast Asian tradition, is a very conservative form of Buddhism, and it doesn't have an idea of reincarnation as Tibetan Buddhism does, but there is a sense of, like Zen, how do you live your life? Do you live it well? Do you hurt others? And whatever way we live our lives, through our thoughts, words, and deeds, they will have a continuing effect on others after we have died, in what we have done and said and thought around other people as well as ourselves. So Tibetan Buddhism and also Pure Land Zen, which I really don't know much about, are the two forms of Buddhism that really speak to continued life or continued consciousness after we have died. So there's a whole variety, but they all come down to how are you going to live this life to awaken to your full capacity as a loving human being. Now, a couple months ago, when I did my Stump the Minister service, I wanted to give you a metaphor around life and death, because it's one that's on our minds, especially as we get older. And especially, even if we're in our 20s and 30s, and we've started to find that our grandparents, or even our parents or our friends, are dying, it is a very sobering experience. So in Buddhist tradition, and other Eastern traditions, but especially Buddhism, here's a metaphor I'm going to give you again, and you will remember it, those of you who were here, as the metaphor of the swimming pool. And some of you came up afterwards and said, I don't get that whatsoever, and that's fine. So here in the West, we have a sense of consciousness or awareness is in here, and our senses take it in, we kind of juggle it up and toss it around, and then we have a sense of, okay, I'm aware of X. In Buddhist tradition and other Eastern traditions, it's not that easy. Because in Buddhism, we talk about consciousness not just being here, but being here. What we are sharing, what I'm sharing with you right now, is sharing consciousness, awareness, sometimes foolishness. But it's an awareness that we are sharing together, and that in Buddhism would be considered shared consciousness. So my metaphor is this. Imagine you are at the lip of a swimming pool, maybe the size of this room. And every little bit of water, maybe the molecules of water in that swimming pool, and there are trillions and trillions, are all consciousness. For maybe wee little critters who have just enough awareness to fly around and live and then die. And so trillions and trillions of drops of water are there in that swimming pool. And then I have an eyedropper as I'm standing on the edge of the pool. And there's one drop of water in it. And let's call that one drop of water Alex. Why not? And then I stand over the swimming pool and I take the eyedropper and I squeeze the top, and that one drop of water goes into that pool with all those trillions of other drops of consciousness. Death. Here's the question. Does that drop of water still exist? Yes or no? One answer is that works for me is yes and no. That little separate drop of water called Alex is gone. But the entire swimming pool of all those little bits of consciousness is like one big drop of water. The little drop is gone. But now, what in Buddhism is called big mind, big self. And if you want to look at it a different way, our seventh principle, the interconnected web of all existence of which we are a part. And that, too, is a swimming pool. And that is where I believe at this stage of my life that we return to after we die. And the great thing about Unitarian Universalism is I could be totally wrong. And that's okay.